Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. We've had another day of World Cup action. We've seen a big upset, a goal fest, and some controversial calls as well. I'm Kay Murray, joined in the studio by Sheka Hislop, Craig Burley, and Frank LaBeouf as well. We've also got Archie Rintoul joining us because we're going to start by talking about Germany's opening game in which they lost to Japan. We'll get the view from Germany in just a moment. But Craig, I want to start with you. Germany took the lead. At that point, did you ever think it would end the way it did with Japan coming back?
No, I didn't. And it's not because Japan are not a good side and they've got some pedigree in World Cups. It's not. I don't think this is as big a shock as the Saudi Arabia-Argentina game, because Japan, if you look at their playing squad, have got players playing in Germany, playing in I think, in Italy, in France, all over Europe in the Premier League. What shocked me was how bad Japan were in the first half. Mm-hmm. They were so tepid in their approach, and they basically allowed Germany to do what they want. But as soon as they come out in the second half and contested more balls and really pressured Germany a bit more, got runners in behind from wide position and deeper positions, and started asking some questions, then Germany just didn't have the answer. Now, were they defensively very poor? Yes. But I think we saw the real Japan in the second half. And maybe in some sense we saw the real Germany as well in the second half. This is not many people's favourites to go all the way in this competition. And I think the way they defended when asked some questions probably tells you the story.
What's the view then in Germany, Archie, after this loss?
It's very gloomy over here. Not as many people have been tuning into this World Cup as it is due to all the issues which have been surrounding it on a human level. But the view in Germany right now, particularly from someone like Bastian Schweinsteiger, who was on terrestrial TV over here, was very damning of the way that they didn't take their chances in front of goal, of the individual mistakes made by Niklas Süle. He went in very hard on Niklas Süle for the way that he defended for the first goal, letting the attacker cut inside, but also then doing such a terrible mistake in terms of holding the offside line a couple of metres by the looks of it on the wide angle that I've seen, allowing then it was Takuma Asano to run in on Nico Schlotterbeck, who had already given away three penalties in his six caps for Germany. And I think that's very much playing on his mind when he's challenging Asano of, I can't go in too hard here or else I'm giving away another penalty. Schlotterbeck has been in terrible form for Borussia Dortmund, and he was the big surprise inclusion in this lineup as well. So that was a gamble that didn't pay off. And then you have the mentality, which Ilkay Gundogan went in on in his post-match interview, saying that not enough of their players wanted the ball going forward. This is Germany we're talking about. So, yeah, problems all round. And you wonder, has enough changed since Joachim Löw left the job? If I told you, Kay, that this team was still being coached by Joachim Löw and you didn't know the situation, I don't think you would have been too surprised by that performance today. And you can still see that Hansi Flick played, yeah, the role that he did in the last German setup. And you wonder, is too much still the same?
Let's go to and pick up on the defensive concerns then, because there were already defensive concerns about this Germany side before the World Cup. After this game, do you have more, Frank?
Well, yes, and I will go with what Lothar Matthäus said after the game in the way that he doesn't understand why Mr. Flink continue to give chances and confidence to Süle as a right back, where obviously he's not the type of player in the modern time where you can put on the right side, the centre back, especially when you have Kerrer, who could be put there and be more effective. So I don't know, Rüdiger and Süle as centre back, Kerrer on the right side would have been a little bit more solid for me and more natural. And it doesn't it doesn't go well for me because they consider it. That's the thing. As Craig mentioned, you would have thought that Germany was good the first half. Well, it's more Japan were bad. And when Japan, you know, decided to wake up and play their football, we didn't see Germany anymore. They missed big double chances with Gnabry, but otherwise, you know, we only saw Japan. And we all felt, I think, if you know football and understand football, we all felt that what happened was about to happen, and that's the thing. But because defensively, they were nowhere near it.
When I thought the first half, I thought Germany were good. I thought they were good to the point that they relaxed. That first half was so easy for Germany, and it seemed to get to a German squad that who should know better. And given the feelings of 4.5 years ago, I expected too much more of. The thing with Japan in the second half for me, and this was the surprise again, which you also saw with Saudi Arabia against Argentina, the tempo that they came out with in the second half was unlike anything that I'd seen in previous World Cups, and maybe expected given the temperature and the climate conditions in Qatar. But these countries are playing with a tempo that I don't think we'd seen at the World Cup level, and quite clearly surprised Germany. And when questions were asked, they simply did not have the answer. Yes, they were very poor defensively, but in the second half as well, weren't able to do a whole lot in the attacking third. Listen, I know Gonda had to come up big, but that's what you would expect. If you're going up against Germany, you know your goalkeeper is going to be tested. That quadruple save by Gonda, I thought it was something special. That's me and my goalkeeping anorak on. But in the end, over 90 minutes, and in particular, given the adjustments to Japan tactically and the pace that they played with, fully deserving.
I mean, don't forget Manuel Neuer had to make a couple of other great saves in the second half.
Sure.
I mean, it wasn't just like a hit and run. And also the penalty that Germany got. I mean, it was a giveaway, wasn't it? And the goalkeeper came out. It could have been two penalties. Such a stupid challenge. He fouled him and then he threw himself on top of him. So it's not like Germany had to earn that. But let's go back to the defending. Because I, like most people who sort of follow the Bundesliga and the national teams, was surprised. I wasn't so much surprised when Sula was playing right back because he's played there before.
Yeah.
I can see Stevie sitting watching this now going, I've told you all about Sula. I've told you all. He said he's too slow to get moving. And you can maybe get away with that as a centre-back, but when you're at right-back, even though he has played there for club and country, sometimes you've got to be, your body's got to be in a different position. You've got to be a lot more aware than what he is. But how desperate must Hansi Flick be, and how unconvinced must he be with some of the other squad when he's playing a big, strapping centre-half at right-back, and he's playing one of the centre halves in the Bundesliga with the least form, and Schlotterbeck as the centre back. What does that say about his confidence? Because he's going to have to make changes for this Spain game, or that defence will get torn apart. Right? Fact. He's going to have
it's
to
not
make
like
changes. And whether it's even the shape or personnel arch, he's going to have to make changes.
It's not like Germany have suffered an embarrassing defeat to Spain in the last few years, though, Craig. So I'm sure they'll be going into this game with lots of
confidence. Only 6-0.
No,
it was only 6.
Yeah, only 6. Well, I still remember Manuel Neuer effectively talking to the post. That was the level of crazy that game forced him to. What you say about Thilo Kehrer as well, he played the most minutes under Hansi Flick up until this game. Everyone was surprised, I think, that he went with Sula instead. This was a defensive performance reminiscent of Borussia Dortmund in their last few weeks of the season. And as you know, Craig, that's not a good thing. I think there's also questions about balance in the rest of the team. That attacking lineup, sure, it's got great players in it, but did it work as a quartet? And the chances that they're missing as well. One of the biggest themes before this tournament was Germany's lack of a number 9. And whilst Kai Havertz, I thought, was a bit below par on the whole today, his link-up play was good. I don't know whether he has that same number 9 sense that someone like Niklas Füllkrug has, even if Füllkrug is not as talented as Havertz. So I think that is a real problem for Germany right now in the centre as well. Ilkay Gundogan also said that the second goal they conceded was the easiest goal that I think he'd ever seen conceded at a World Cup. That's how soft it was. So, yeah, everyone in Germany right now is up in arms. Thomas Müller, for example, saying that he was baffled and shocked by this result. And, yeah, I think there's a real sense of they don't know where to turn now in Germany after this.
I don't think, Frank, you can play... I don't know what you guys think. I don't think you can play with Havertz and Müller in the Spain game. I don't think, for me, you've got to play Musiala because he's such a talent.
Yeah.
And he's such a confident young man. And I think in the right team, you'll see the best of him. But I think in the Spain game, they're going to need an extra midfielder, natural, like with Goretzka. Whether it's Goretzka or somebody else, they're going to need Kimmich, Gundogan, Goretzka, or three midfield players. And then they're going to have to figure it out from around there. They can't leave that midfield area exposed against Spain because you saw what they did to Costa Rica today, and Germany are going to have to figure that out.
Don't you have a feeling that since the beginning of that World Cup, you know, big teams, so-called big team, every time they score one goal, they start to play slower, you know, a little bit deeper, not finishing the game, not respecting the opponent by finishing him, scoring a second goal, underestimating that team that they just scored a goal to. And that's the case. It was a case for Argentina. It was a case for Germany.
Not for England and Spain.
Not for England and Spain. Not for France as well, because they considered the goal before. But I feel that I have that feeling that every time a big team scores, well, okay, we've done the job. I think it's going to be enough. No, you have to be respectful towards the team that you are playing against because they can react and they can do damages. It's what happened today. Germany just finished the job.
I just thought that Germany looked like this was easy because given how the first 45 goes. But to Craig's point previously, I understand you want to play that extra midfielder against Spain, but Germany without that out-and-out centre-forward, and they choose Havertz, who do you turn to score your goals? And that's a big question for
Müller
Germany.
Müller was the kind of guy before.
But is Müller the one playing through the middle, leading your attack? You know, that's... I'm looking at the graphic that we had up, and I'm trying to think of how Hansi Flick addresses the issues that you raised.
Well, somebody's going to have to get on the phone and phone Miroslav Klose and get back. It's the only thing I can
think
of.
He's 44, Craig. He's 44. He's managing in Austria right now, SC Altach. So I don't know how well that's going, but... Yeah, I think he'll be watching through his fingers right now. The other option they have in the squad is Youssoufa Moukoko, who came on. But yep. It's, you know, he's only just turned 18 on Sunday. I think, as you say, it's about how do they fit the pieces into the puzzle. And that's something that Spain have done a lot better in terms of making sure that the system works. And with Germany, I think Hansi Flick maybe wants too much in the of the current system. If he's going to be attacking, then go for it. Then maybe bin off one of those midfielders, those holding midfielders, and really go and attack your opponents. But right now, the team still seems confused going forward, and you could see it. There was a point, I rewatched the second half. It was not good viewing from a German perspective, and there's a moment where Ilkay Gundogan has time to stop, points to Jamal Musiala, telling him where to go, and Musiala trots over. And Musiala was one of the better players they had today. But yeah, I think as Xhaka says there, and then there was that moment where Antonio Rudiger, who I love his sense of fun, but you wonder whether the Japanese players, when they saw him prancing towards the corner flag and getting the ball out, whether they thought, you know what, if he thinks this is over, we're still in this.
It's interesting you say that about Gundogan trying to direct players into position. I saw the very same thing in the Belgium game with Kevin De Bruyne, getting frustrated. And I think it's a telling fact that these guys at Man City are operating on a different level. And when you go to the international team, that's how difficult it can be sometimes, because guys are doing things different things to you're doing at your club level. And then you take a couple of, particularly if you're in the midfield, once you take a couple of extra touches, bang, you get smashed. But when you're at your club and it's free flow and it's around the corner one time, it's one and two touch, all of a sudden those options are not there. You're taking a couple of extra touches, making you look like a bad player. I'm not a historian of the game, obviously. When Germany were sent home after league, when Germany, all right, Arch.
No comment, please.
When Germany exited at the group stage in 2018, yeah. Was that the first time that that's ever happened to them? Arch, do we know?
Yeah.
At a World Cup,
yes. I think too.
That's the first time yes. It's ever happened, and we're already sitting on a 50-50 fence here. When, if they lose to Spain, that's going to happen to them two World Cups in a row. I mean, would we have been saying that about Germany when they were down in Brazil, you know, winning the World Cup and battering teams? I mean, it's crazy.
Well, we should have known.
It's a different generation.
No, I understand.
It's a different generation.
I think that's something as well, that this generation is still trying to play in the same way as the last generation of your Bastian Schweinsteigers, your Sami Khediras, Philipp Lahm, for example. And of this current Germany team, I'd be interested from your guys' perspective, how many get into they are the best in their position in the world right now? Because I think that of that previous Germany team, there were more players who had that status. And whilst there are some very good players here, I don't think that they quite reach that same level. And maybe there's an overestimation from the Germans' point of view of their quality right now.
But what I'm, I agree with you. But what I meant by my point was that it's Germany.
Yeah.
It's a cycle.
Historically, we expect Germany to be.
You know, it's Germany, it's a cycle, it will happen. Maybe that's what they've thought as well, and they're not the only country that's just sort of hit the buffers and it's not just happened for them again. Not really got the big stars. Thomas Müller's getting older. I mean, Musiala's, it might not have been his greatest 90 minutes, but he's a terrific footballer. What concerns me now is that they've already, as Archie mentioned, had a thumping from Spain not too long ago. You're back at the hotel. We've all been in hotels and been away for a month at World Cups. It's great when you're winning or getting a point here or there, but when you take a bit of a beating like that in the second half and then you've got to get
and then you watch Spain's highlights.
I think I don't think they've been watching that.
No, tell you what though, they may have known that they were doomed before a ball was even kicked in this game, because this is a sea otter in Japan. This is the new Paul the Octopus, except it's a sea otter. And he predicted.
He got some fur, yeah.
That it was going to be.
Clever guy.
Well, I don't want to be a spoil sport, but they put something in those pots that the otter likes, you know.
No, they didn't.
Like a bar of chocolate or something.
It's solid.
A dairy milk. A bar of chocolate. Whatever you want. What do otters eat? I don't know.
I'm pretty sure it's not chocolate.
No. All right.
For sure.
Fish and chips.
All right, we're going fish and chips.
Fish and chips. A burger.
So we'll see if we see any more of this otter and if he makes the fame or she.
Oh, God, hold on. We need to be more forward thinking in this show. Get the bucket, get whoever this is in Japan to see if Germany are going to beat Spain or not. I mean, we can't be looking back all the time.
Well, we do have to look back just for the moment, though, because we need to talk about what happened in Spain's game today.
Can you believe we're showing that? I can.
It would be nice.
Because it is, obviously, Spain against Germany next. But it was a 7-0 win. 7 goals past a hapless Costa Rica. It has to be said, a number of Spanish youngsters shining in this game. Luis Garcia is with us as well. Listen, 16 shots taken, none in return, 7 goals. Spain completed 994 passes to Costa Rica's 100.
All right, Stato.
Got to be a Stato in this one.
All right, Stato.
Do you have some expected assists?
None of those. Don't worry, I don't want to annoy him before we even get halfway through the show. Luis Garcia, what a great performance from Luis Enrique's men.
Yes, Kay, it's been a fantastic performance. And overall, I think that every single player must be very happy of David's play, because from the first minute to the last minute, every single player knew what to do. It was a plan. It was about trying to get as many goals as possible. And they start pressing. They start bringing the line high. It was a plan very well thought about this game, knowing that Costa Rica was going to defend a little bit. They were going to try to bring balls in the air. But there was not even that. I think that they couldn't even manage to get a shot on target. And, well, I think that Luis Enrique was right when he decided to bring that squad. There's been a lot of controversy about some players that they were missing, if this Saidi was going to have problems at the back with some mistakes in the past few months and up front, because there was no many goals. But at the end, it was about giving the opportunity to this young team to prove themselves. And, well, actually, they did an amazing, amazing game.
It was a lesson, wasn't it?
Absolute lesson. But can they do that against the German side?
Well, we'll go back to our conversation, 6-0 recently against Germany. Look, it's going to be a lot more difficult. Germany are wounded for sure and will make changes. And to go back to Lewis's point, Enrique, in picking his squad and now his team for the first game, has been true to his word. It's not all about the players for him who are in the greatest form. Jordi Alba hasn't played all the time at Barcelona. Ferran Torres hasn't played all the time. Asensio hasn't played all the time. Rodri has gone back to centre-half. He's done that before. He's saying, these are the guys I trust. Whether they're playing at the clubs or not, we'll figure that out. But if you sit off Sergio Busquets and Pedri, like Costa Rica did, you'll get spanked. Because those guys, and Gavi, to be fair, but Gavi's more of a... he can pass it, but he's more of a hustle-bustle as well. You know, the other two, you can't sit off them and be allowed to be dominated in the middle of the park, because those two are two of the best passers in world football. But it was hugely impressive. I mean, hugely impressive. And I'm sitting here and I can't come up with an argument about how Germany are going to stop them. I just can't. Although it'll be a bigger test, I can't find a reason how they're going to nullify this Spanish side.
Have they staked their claim? Because even in the Euros, this Luis Enrique side, we saw, Frank, they were the team that actually gave the eventual winners, Italy, the most problems. It was only on penalties that they went out. Have they just sent a big message out today to the rest of the teams in the World Cup?
Definitely, because, you know, there were some question marks, you know, like maybe 2 or 3 years ago, because the team was young, because they were looking for a new generation with a new cycle. And it seemed that they found it. There is a real chemistry between the players. They understand each other. Even the players that we are seeing that they don't play, they gave the best. Jordi Alba was exceptional today, I found. And with the young generation, there is the real chemistry and goes everywhere, and the danger comes from everywhere. That's the thing. I felt, you know, I wanted to join the goalkeeper union today, because I felt so bad for Navas, because that guy doesn't deserve that. I don't know where Costa Rica stands, really, but they didn't exist. So are they so bad, or Spain are so good? I will go for the second option, because really, what they showed today, wow, nobody can cope with that right now.
I think that's a big question. Are Spain that good or Costa Rica that bad? I think it's a little bit of both. But from a Spanish perspective, first of all, they come into this tournament, similar questions as to Germany. Who's the out-and-out striker? Who delivers the goals? Is it Alvaro Morata? And all these kind of decisions for Luis Enrique to make. But it's great to make those decisions going forward on the back of this performance or this win. To that point, Costa Rica are god-awful.
Yeah.
Costa Rica are god-awful in CONCACAF standards. Costa Rica was good in 2010. They were god-awful in 2014.
How the hell have they got there then? It's this freaking CONCACAF qualification, which I keep telling people about. It's nonsense.
In all honesty, and which is why I said they're god-awful in CONCACAF standards. I think the pandemic and how the congested qualifying campaign and how the pandemic affected a lot of the other countries in CONCACAF played into Costa Rica's hands.
And 2014, they had a good campaign.
Yeah, but... I know. It's not a history channel.
You're right. You were just talking about being a historian earlier in the show.
Well, we're not on the history channel. It's 2022. I mean, how the hell did they get there in 2022?
They had a good team in 2014 when they got out of the group stage. I think they beat Uruguay in the group stage. And that group of players went into 2018, but that cycle was over. But they showed faith with that group of players in 2018. And now, as I say, I genuinely believe that the pandemic and how it affected the majority of nations in CONCACAF played into Costa Rica's hands, because this is not an accurate showing of this region. And so you take it for what it is. We'll get to know the true value of Spain going forward, but what a performance and result to build on.
To that extent, I think if you want to have a chance against Spain, the only way to get it is to push up, you know, put a great pressure on it and make sure that you don't let them breathe. That's the only thing you can do. If you let them play, you won't touch the ball, 1990, 900, you get fed up.
It's not the History Channel.
Well, I know. Well, statistics
when
kind
we,
of.
When we go to a 48-team World Cup, I'm just going to want to put my head in a bucket. Because we're going to see more and more results.
Oh,
this. Now, people will say, oh, what, Saudi Arabia, Argentina. That's a bit of an anomaly.
Yeah.
Then they'll say Japan, Germany. If you're thinking Japan, Germany is such a big shot, you don't know anything about the Japan national team. They're a good side. Mm. And Germany are so-so. Now, Argentina, one of the favourites to go all the way, particularly because of Messi and recent results and their string of wins and their Copa America and all that. That's why that was a shock. Once we go down this 48-team World Cup, we're going to see more of this. It's so lopsided, and it doesn't make for good viewing. Come on, this was great if you're a fan of Spain and you love football.
Lewis loved it.
But,
yeah.
from a neutral point of view, Lewis, this wasn't a game, was it? It was just too easy.
Yeah, I think it was a little bit too easy. Yeah, Shaka was mentioning about that when it's a score like this on a World Cup is because, one, it was very good, but the other one, it was very bad. And then that combination made a massive score. And honestly, we could see that this Spanish team is built to create, to be aggressive, to go forward. We've seen the players. There's one in one occasion that I saw a Costa Rican team player grabbing the ball and surrounded by five players trying to chase him and regain the ball. That's the mentality that Luis Enrique has managed to send to this young team. You got the experience of the back line with Jordi Alba, even with Busquets, Rodri, Laporte, or Azpilicueta. And then you got the boldness, the fearlessness that you have with Gavi, with Pedri, with Dani Olmo. And you guys said very well that Luis Enrique, he's been very honest. I want the players who really deliver for me. Well, really, when they are with me, are going to give me what I need. I need very specific players. I don't need a center forward. If I have one, but really we don't have at the moment, a really target man that we can rely on him to score in a World Cup 10 goals. So I need players who can give me something extra. We got creativity, Gavi, Pedri, in the second front, Carlos Soré. And we got speed up front with Dani Olmo. He's sharp. Today was one of his best games for the national team. Then Asensio, suddenly he's rejuvenated. He's become the player that we all knew back when he was playing for Zinedine Zidane. And that's the ability for Luis Enrique to bring the best of every single player. And you guys mentioned Ferran Torres wasn't even playing, not playing very well, and suddenly he scored two goals and showing a fantastic ability today. So it's at the end that message that have sent Luis Enrique to this team. If you believe, if you go all together, we can manage because they got so much talent. So it's a very dangerous team at the moment, this Spanish side, if they start believing in themselves.
I mean, you would have said that Alvaro Morata was kind of the in-form striker playing regular at Atleti, but he's gone with Asensio. They were even able to leave, amongst others, a natural striker I think is really good at home in Gerard Moreno, who it does get goals, but he's been true to his process as a coach and how he goes about it, and he's going to do it his way with his squad, and yeah, I mean, these guys are not getting picked, some of them, and they know they're not playing for their teams at home, but they're walking into a World Cup and starting for their national team and playing really well.
Let's take a look at how the group's standing up then after this first round of games in Group E. Obviously, Spain and Japan with 3 points goal difference, obviously heavily favouring Spain after that result. As for Germany, though, they'll be out unless they get at least a point versus Spain if Japan beat Costa Rica on Sunday. Realistically, Germany need a win. Let's talk to Archie Rintus about this. It's interesting, Archie, that Frank just said Germany are going to have to come out and have to attack Spain, because you were just talking about their mindset, saying that you think that they weren't so confident in this game that we saw them in today against Japan.
They were. That's been said by... Oh, sorry.
go ahead, Archie.
That's been said by Ilkay Gundogan as well, in terms of that they were lacking conviction in the way that they play. And yeah, I think Frank is right in that they have to go after Spain. And look, high pressing is at least something that Hansi Flick wants from his players. The question is, are this group of players going to be able to band together in that short space of time and come up with the kind of performance that they need against this Spain team? On the positive side, I've checked, only four of the 11 that started that 6-0 drubbing at the hands of Spain played against Japan. So there's at least not too much collective memory within this team of that result. That said, I think it's slim pickings for positives right now. At least they did create the chances. That is something. But I think, yeah, it's about how can they prioritize somebody like Jamal Musiala, who right now on his day is a world beater. It's just, yeah, he doesn't stick away the chance, for example, today. And I think that, yeah, that ended up being symbolic of what was a dark day for German football.
Luis, what happens if Germany high press Spain?
No, of course, I expect them to go for the game. I mean, they cannot allow to the Spanish players to have the ball, to turn, to be creative. And you've seen today the speed of the ball. It was magnificent, trying to frustrate the Costa Rican players. And that's the way that they're going to try to do against Germany. Of course, I'm expecting a better Germany than what I've seen. Yeah, very good 45 minutes, but in the second half, they went down. They allowed Japan to believe. And that's what you cannot allow at the moment. With the confidence they have, with the players that they have, they can do so many rotations. I'm not expecting, for example, to start Rodri against Germany, because for today was a little bit about overrun the Costa Rican players in the middle, have overload of players. And I think it was Craig, the one who was mentioning that they need an extra player in the middle of the park. And definitely, I think that they're going to need it. If they don't bring Goretzka with Kimmich and Musiala to try to work surrounding Rodri or Busquets, Gavi and Pedri, definitely they're not going to have any chance. Because if these players got on the ball, you've seen it. They have so much confidence on the ball. They create, they link it between them. And the movements that they manage to do, they start creating spaces. That's why I think this Spanish side is so difficult to control. If you put not good pressure, good intensity, you're not going to have any chance.
To answer the question, I don't think Spain will change. And it's one of the reasons Unai Simon is in goals. Because, which sounds strange, but he's a risk taker. And he's good with his feet in terms of a goalkeeper.
Now, back definitely in the... well-rested after today.
Now, back in the day, Frank and I would have passed it back to Xhaka, and if he didn't kick it as far up the field as possible, there would have been a fight. But that's not how we play now, so if Germany pressed them... Well, that's true.
That's true.
It was like back there, and it was lumped up the field, and you squeezed up, but the game has changed. And
Second ball. And
people say, oh, David De Gea has been playing great, and blah, blah, blah. But Unai Simon, it's the balance of what he brings as a goalkeeper and what he brings by defenders and midfielders playing it back to him under pressure and him taking chances. He's said himself, the Spanish goalkeeper, that he's not going to change. He will continue to take risks. He's made some mistakes. And let's see how that plays out against Germany. But if Germany press, that's what Spain will do. They'll go back to Unai Simon and they'll try and play through that press.
Archie, what's the status then of Leroy Sané ahead of Sunday's game? And tell us, Germany aren't going out in the groups again, are they?
So there's no further news on Sané's knee injury right now. I think that he was a player that they missed and that forced that rejig from Hansi Flick. I think another worrying element that I've just thought of as well, seems to be a whole list of them for Germany right now, is just how poorly they coped with Japan's tactical change at halftime, going to a 3-5-2, and the way that they went to press them man-to-man. Like, that sort of intensity is something they're going to face again from Spain, as Luis has been detailing. So, yeah. Right now, Kay, I think Germany are going home.
Now, you think about the German fans, how despondent they are tonight, and then you've got to think and share a thought for Derek Ray, our friend and colleague who was on the call for the host broadcaster here in the US, Germany game, you know how he loves Germany, he was all pumped up for it, and then they go and blow it in the second half. How's Derek feeling in his hotel tonight, more importantly?
Very important.
Do you know what? You know how much he loves Germany?
I know. We had the good translation about it, about every.
We
wouldn't want anyone else on the call, fair to say.
Absolutely.
Anyway, we're going to let Archie and Luis go to sleep and dream of what's going to happen on Sunday when Spain take on Germany. Extra time coming up a little later. The guys on the panel, you'll be able to check them out answering your questions if you subscribe to our YouTube page. Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
ESPN FC on ESPN Plus is presented by the all-new Honda CR-V Hybrids. And let's take a look at what happened when Belgium took on Canada. They got their campaign underway with a 1-0 win, thanks to a Michy Batshuayi goal. But Canada did give a good account of themselves. Alphonso Davies even had a penalty saved in this game. Whew. This was an interesting one to watch because I think Canada surprised a few when we saw
not
this
Frank.
Game.
No, you know what? You know, I highly rated Canada, you know? And when the game started, I was keeping on thinking of all the pundits here who were teasing me, especially the guy on my left, you know? I was thinking that Canada was really bad. I think I'm frustrated. I was first very unhappy, upset towards the referee because I thought it was a robbery. I checked the pitch. We're going to talk about it. I think it wasn't a penalty, but I think Canada deserve everything but losing the game. I think it was a robbery from Belgium, because they had nothing. They showed nothing, really. They scored one goal the 44th minute. Otherwise, they've been invisible. I only saw a very good Canadian team in the two-thirds of the pitch and very clumsy on the last third. But really, everybody can confirm that they can go through. When you see the group, they can go through because they have the talent for that. They will have to score goals.
Yeah, Roberto Martinez said after the game that Canada were the better team.
They were, from beginning to end. And I think nerves and a lack of experience at this level cost Canada. It surprised me not to see Alphonso Davies stepping up, though his record isn't great. But standing over it, I just didn't feel that he looked like the leader we saw for Canada during all of CONCACAF World Cup qualifying. Mm. And it spoke of nerves for a player who's plays at this level or near enough, certainly for club level, and one who the rest of this Canadian national team takes their cues off of.
Can I add a few stats here as stata when we talk about the penalty?
You've done it the rest of the night.
So Alphonso Davies has taken two penalties for Canada and scored both of them, but Jonathan David has scored 9 of 12. So how is a decision like that made when it comes to taking a penalty in a competition like this? Is it because you're the big name and the one who everybody knows?
No. I took penalties before Frank was at Chelsea. And I took penalties at Celtic and Derby. Not because I was the captain at Derby or at Celtic, you know. It's because you feel at times you're the more confident and you're the better penalty taker. And then at one point, Henrik Larsson took over and That's just the way it is. And Frank took them at Chelsea because Frank was good at taking penalties. And I'm sure Alphonso Davies is good at taking penalties. Look, I don't think the referee helped him out here at all. And now, I know you've got to, I know you still got to score. I know it's a game of bluff with a goalkeeper. But he comes back from the VAR check, gives the penalty. He then flaps around while Alphonso Davies was stood waiting to take it. He's over there telling people about their toes an inch over the line. And then he slowly walks over to the other side of the box. And then he starts telling people again not to run in the box. Like, they don't know that. And then he goes from there and he makes sure Courtois is not behind the line, he's on the line. And all the time as a player, and Frank as a penalty taker will know, the longer you've got to think about it, the more chance there is that you're going to change your mind. Where's the goalkeeper going to go? Is he going to go that way? Is he going to... And the longer it takes, is the more it sort of clouds your judgment. So I don't think that helped them. I'm not saying it was the reason, but I don't think it helped. Like Frank, I thought Canada were amazing. Amazing. But there's no word in this game called deserve. At the end of the day, you've got to get the job done. They didn't do it. They played some great stuff. I agree. I think they're going to, if they play like that, they'll give themselves a real chance of getting points in the other games. As for Belgium, I've never fancied them in this tournament. They're number two in the world in FIFA's rankings, but they're not number two in the world. They're not. They're nowhere near it. And I think you saw the way that their defence was stripped apart at times by Canada, where they'll come unstuck in this competition. The better teams will pick this Belgian team apart.
To that point about penalty takers, Trinidad and Tobago in a similar position in 2006, our first World Cup, this is Canada's first in, what, 40 years. We had one player with that pedigree in Dwight Yorke. We had others who played at a not too dissimilar level. I played in Premier League, as did Stirling John. But there's no question in my mind that if we got a penalty in 2006, Dwight Yorke could have been the one to take it. Because it is such a nervy situation for everybody involved. And as I mentioned, we had players like Russell Latipi, who played at the highest level, Stirling John and a number of others. But just being there in that circumstance, first time your country's there, and I'm kind of generalizing, given Canada's position, first time in 40 years I mentioned, you look at the player with the most experience. That is the one, I think, inevitably you turn to. And that was Alphonso Davies. So I don't really question the decision. But to Craig's point, as much as he may not be a penalty taker, he knows this arena. And if he isn't able to keep his cool, I think that transfers to everybody else in that park. And while Canada, again, played wonderfully well, you just have to wonder how they would have fared. Had that gone in, had Alphonso Davies been a little bit more settled, how the rest of the squad would have settled, and how that game would have played out.
And it was Thibaut Courtois that is up against him. So with all those other factors
he's a big
going
boy,
around,
he's a big boy.
Is that in your head as well when you're taking the penalty?
Well, of course. If you are facing an unknown goalkeeper, you know, you less wonder. When you are facing the guy who won the Champions League and was maybe one of the most important player last year for Real Madrid, saving so many chances against Real Madrid. Yes, you wonder. Of course, you know that the guy takes lots of space and that. But it wasn't taken properly in the way that I know the power of Davies. And you have to shoot stronger. You have to give the power to that. You know, like Gareth Bale did, you know, there is no chance, even if you go on the right side, and even if you are Thibaut Courtois, that you can save it because it goes too fast and you can't get it and go below. It's sad. But talking about Davies, I don't understand. He started as a left back, let's say, or as a, how do you call that nowadays? Mm-hmm. And he ended up finishing number 10. They give a little bit too much.
When he played in MLS, he started as a striker, played out on the wing, and for Canada in qualifying, he played higher up, in left hand side as a left winger, played higher up the park. While yes, he has played as a left back for Bayern Munich, but he's always been used more advanced for
he's
Canada.
Coming back from a hamstring injury.
Listen, I don't know if you've ever done this, but I've actually changed my mind on a run-up.
On the last second, yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
I've changed my mind at the last second. And it's normally because there's a big goalie, like, and you go, or he moves. I've come up and I've been going to like sling it that way like Bale did, and I've ended up side footing it.
Yeah, but how old were you? How old were you when you did that?
25.
Yeah, how old is he? I think he's very young.
He's younger than
anyway. But to your point, you know, yeah, you can do it if you see something happening from the goalkeeper. There is a music. There's a music. The goalkeeper had the right to go a little bit forward.
He's 22, by the way.
22, yeah. And there's still a lack of experience, even if he plays for the biggest team in the world, maybe. But there is, again, to go to the penalty, I was sure to go somewhere. I say, okay, I'm good to go there. But suddenly I was seeing, because of my run, the goalkeeper moving from right to left. I knew that I could change my mind because I knew that he was going right, left, right, or just left, right. You know, that was kind of a music. So you dance with the goalkeeper. At the same time that you run forward, he moves, and you can decide. But you need a little bit of experience for that. And he hasn't got, because he didn't kick too many penalties.
Look, he's missed a penalty. It's not a crime. It happens.
Oh, yeah,
he'll be beating himself up about it a little bit back at the team hotel.
Oh,
but you've got to brush yourself down and go back out there the next game and put a performance in. I think he's more than got that in him. And look, Canada lost a sloppy goal with a ball over the top. They've got to think about that as well.
And there was a thinking that there could have been three penalties in this game. Should we tackle that?
Well, we should clear up certainly the second one, which was a huge talking point. And I think most of us got suckered in to the offside call when Hazard played the ball back in.
Oh, my God.
Now, Hazard intentionally plays the ball back as a pass, which then plays the whole field onside. Can be no offside from that back pass into the box from Eden Hazard. Now, everybody thought the VAR just completely stuffed this up and it was just the worst mistake in the world. And that's how it seemed. But actually, when the Canadian player was fouled, or seemed to be fouled, the goal, the decision was not a penalty. Not because it was onside, but because Jan Vertonghen, I think it was, actually, on the close-ups, toe-poked the ball away in the challenge. And hence, it wasn't a foul. So there was no even discussion of offside within the VAR.
I want to know something, because I'm not a referee. But and if you tell me that because you barely touched the ball, like it happened to Jan Vertonghen, but make a foul after, why is not a penalty?
But for me, and here's the kind of defining... It's Buchanan who's coming back from an offside position, I see in inverted commas. If Vertonghen doesn't redirect the ball, even if he gets a touch, if he doesn't redirect the ball away from Buchanan, and Buchanan can still run onto that loose ball, and then he's felled because of that touch, I think penalty. Mm. But seeing and Craig's right. We were not afforded the view that we were able to see online after the game. It does seem that Vertonghen gets a significant touch, does divert the ball away from Buchanan enough. So even though he does catch Buchanan afterwards, the ball has been moved significantly and
fair enough.
No penalty for
him. I mean, everybody was sitting and going, how can VAR not see that Eden Hazard is in control? When we talked about this with Mark Clattenburg a couple of weeks ago, it wasn't just a wild swipe under pressure. Mm. It was a controlled pass. How can they not know that plays everybody on side? When in fact, it was a touch which the close-up camera showed, which we did not see.
Is it
an argument that we could hear the audio of the VAR speaking to the referee?
Yeah, we haven't.
It would help clear things up for us.
Like in rugby.
I think what Sydney confused me in the moment, less so the audio, that it seemed that the referee gave offside. So if at first look you think he's giving offside, then you think that that's a call, as opposed to letting the play on and it not being offside, it not being a foul because he saw it as that second replay, let's call it.
I think they've been very lucky. I think they, as Shaka said, they decided that it was an offside. It's then maybe after the game that they realised that Vertonghen touched the ball and they could be saved by that.
Yes.
And they'd be hammered by the old pundits.
Somehow two wrongs made a right.
Yeah, oh my God, we're finally right, you know. But we are lucky because it wasn't thought like that or decided like that.
What do they call it in the US? Do they call it stabilisers for a bike when a little kid, you know, when you
Your balance wheels.
The balance wheels, we call them the stabilisers. So we're talking about VAR audio, right? They've been using VAR now for 4 or 5 years, whatever it is. But these referees are like a little kid with a bike and take the stabilisers off.
Yeah.
They're falling over all over the place. They don't want us to hear what they're saying because they're making so many errors. Now, on this occasion, it seems they got it right, but we see these domestic games every weekend, every week, and the amount of mistakes that are still being made under VAR. We saw it in the England-Iran game with the wrestling in the box on Harry Maguire.
Oh yeah.
So I really don't think that these referees are very keen for us to hear some of the gibberish that they're talking.
Yeah, the third one is just before half-time, Richie Larea broke into the area. He was running side-by-side with Alex Witsel. He went down claiming a penalty. VAR review said no penalty. Our guy Dale Johnson said this is the kind of decision that is best left on field with the referee rather than the VAR. But Hercules Gomez has argued on Football America that it should have been a penalty.
Oh.
Mark Clattenburg, who's on with the national broadcaster, said absolutely not.
I didn't think it was a penalty. But it is one of those, if you're supporting Canada and you see that, especially if you see the slow motion replays, always make things look so much worse. If you're supporting Canada, you see that and you think that is absolutely a penalty. Obviously, if you're Belgian, you see totally opposite. For me, I looking at it in real time, in real speed, it didn't impress me as a penalty. And again, though you can see it in slow motion and things look so much more exaggerated, I stand by how I felt when I first saw it.
I will go completely with Shaka. And I think you have to understand something. And I'm going to take the example. You have two guys running. The forward has the ball. And suddenly he put his left foot inside, in the middle of the 2 feet or the 2 legs of the defender. It's what happened in that situation. Then fall. Therefore, no penalty because you look for that. You look for the forward. It would have been the other way around. For people to understand, a defender runs with a guy with the ball, put his leg or his foot in the middle of the legs of the forward, it's a penalty. So why do you want to give a penalty for a striker when he has the ball and where you will go the other way for the defender? So it doesn't work. It's not, and that you have to understand. Many times I hear forward players or former forward players saying, like Hercules, but I heard that many times. Yeah, but there is contact. But who occurred the contact? That's the striker. He put his leg in the middle to be trapped and to fall then. No, that's a trick. That's a trick. It's not fair. That's not sport. That's not football for me.
I think Football America's might be tilting their bias a little bit towards CONCACAF, if you ask me. Just saying. I mean, just throwing that out there. I'm with the boys. I think there's an element of the attacker not only moving his leg across, which he's entitled to do, and then slowing down a little bit.
Yeah.
And now, is it clumsy from Witsel? Yes, it is. But I was happy with what Shaq said. It's a bit of a coming together. I didn't have a problem with that not being given as a penalty kick.
Let's take a look at how the group is shaping up then after those first games, because I do know that Frank Leboeuf was up bright and early to see Morocco.
He was texting me about Canada all day today.
Yeah. don't forget I said they're going to reach the semi-final.
You never texted me about Denmark.
For more against Canada, we're going to send it out to Qatar with Alexis and Nadim.
Thanks so much, Kay, and we're still soaking in all the beautiful views here in Doha. This is a point from one of our other sets in the souk, Waqif. I'm alongside the big man, Ned. I haven't seen him in a hot minute, but we were able to take in all the games today. They came thick and fast, didn't they, Neds? We just enjoyed Belgium up against Canada. You know I had Canada coming out of the group in this one,
yes,
and they put
did.
Up quite the fight, but Belgium in the end getting the win. So much so, though, that Roberto Martinez literally said that he felt that Canada were the better team. Do you agree?
Yeah, I would have to agree, and I think most people would agree with that as well. When you look at the nature of that game, how well Canada were pressing, making Belgium feel uncomfortable, we never really got a chance to see the best version of Belgium. And that, some people could say because that was Belgium's fault, but I think it was due to Canada. I think the sort of speed that they had, the direct nature of it, and also the penalty miss as well. I'll hold my hands up and say I was surprised how well they played against the Belgian side, which some people expect to go quite far in the tournament. But this is the nature of football, and I think Roberto Martinez is right. They probably didn't deserve to win, but the beauty of the game is you just need to score more than your opposition. They did that today, so both teams, in theory, can take away positives. I think you can hear from the Canada camp that they believe they can beat anybody. Mm. And for the Belgium team, they've suffered but still come out with the 3 points. So they believe they've got the grit to be able to step forward and play better and win more games.
Well, Martinez definitely will be happy that Belgium did get the 3 points in this one. But probably a performance he might not be happy with is one you weren't happy with. And that's one of your boys, Kevin De Bruyne.
Yeah.
Not often that he doesn't hit the mark, but no. Today you felt he was off it.
No, I think he was a little bit off it according to his very, very high standards, and I think he'd probably admit to that himself. There were a few opportunities where he'd break the lines and he'd have the ball and be driving, but someone else threw balls weren't as clean as we've seen from him in the past, and you know, that's his own high standard. We used to see him playing like some incredible through balls which we would never even think of doing ourselves, but today it was some of the simpler ones. So I think he'll be probably disappointed with that, but if I was to be a betting man, I'd bet that he'd address that going into the second game. So again, you take the positives, you won the match, and you didn't play at your best. So what's to come when you do play better?
I still have Canada getting out.
Listen, that's fine. You can do. And I think from what
did
I've seen today...
Did more of your respect? That's all I wanted to
so
hear
much,
now.
So much, so
much. I know you're on this Serbian bandwagon.
No. I was actually... I'm not. Don't do that. I'm not on the Serbian one. But what I would say... is I think the energy in which they played at, the nature of the high press, the good football that they played, and the fact that they literally made Belgium kind of look pedestrian. This is a Belgian side that was in the last stage of this competition four years ago. It was very, very impressive. And it's, for me, I think of the CONCACAF sides, I think it's the best overall performance, but it's a shame that they came out with nothing.
All right. Well, you know me. I'm always campaigning for our CONCACAF teams. And
that's a fact.
Canada definitely...
That's a fact.
That's a fact. Exactly. And Canada definitely has made at least the CONCACAF region proud in this World Cup qualifying campaign. Right. Let's move on away from the World Cup now, because there is some big news over in the blue side of Manchester. In case you haven't noticed, that is Nadim's side, Mr. Manchester City TV over her.
Allegedly.
And that means Pep Guardiola is going to stay on at least till 2025.
You see, it's a big smile on your face. You seem quite happy with that.
I'm happy because you're happy. And I know that's your boy, I know that's your club, I know that they make your bank account happier. So Guardiola, Man City, I mean, it was a he's Team ESPN today.
Listen, just look at me, guys. This.
Nah, but we do know that you love City,
yes.
Of course. That is your side of Manchester. And Pep Guardiola is almost feels like a true Mancunian now. This had to be done, right?
Yeah. I wouldn't say initially it had to be done, but it felt as if people wanted him to stay. But with Pep Guardiola, he's earned the right to be able to make a decision himself. I think some managers, they end up being kicked away. But for him, the years that he's given to City, some of the highs and, you know, the emotion that's involved with it, I think as... if people wonder whether he's really attached to the club, you look back to the last game of last season against Aston Villa, and he's brought to tears as the team's winning the title. But it's a title that they've won a few times since he's been manager, so it shows how much the club means to him, how much those moments mean to him, and overcoming those stressful situations with him, with himself, with his management staff, with the wider staff, with the fans, with the players. And I think for the fans themselves, you know, continuity really does matter. I think as you look around some of the leagues and you see the managerial changes that are going on, it's taken a bit of time to bed in. But in this instance now, there's continuity. So you kind of know what Man City are going to look like. Because if it's anything like the years that have gone by, there's reason to be hopeful. There's reason to be positive. Because so far, I think he's done a pretty good job.
Look at that smile on your face. A two-year contract extension. Is that enough to win the Champions League? Or maybe two? Because we all know that's what...
Here we go.
I'm just spitting facts. That's what you need. You've had Pep Guardiola for so long. He was brought in to win the Champions League.
That's
he
the only thing, yeah.
Won it.
That's all it is.
Well,
so why has he not been sacked before now then? Why has he not been sacked before now then?
Because he's been winning everything else domestically.
So it's not just the Champions League then?
Well, you need the Champions League, don't you?
Do you need the Champions League?
I mean, Everyone wants the Champions League. But it's no secret that Pep wants it.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's no secret that every other top manager wants it as well. I think he'll be very much disappointed. It's been so long since he's last won it. And the fact that some of the teams he's had across those years have been as good as anyone in Europe. So there is a sense of disappointment, not just amongst him, but amongst those players as well. And I'm sure the next 2 years, he'll continue to try and have that as a big priority. But the fact is, it never comes at the expense of anything. Mm. So I think in the years when they've not won the Champions League, domestically they've been great overall. So I think that's going to be the idea. Be great domestically, but now can you get over the edge and win a Champions League again and maybe sort of solidify his legacy as such for the one or two doubters that are left in the world?
Well, beside us over on our ESPN Argentina set, we had a very special guest in Kun Agüero yesterday, and I remember doing an interview with him where he did say that it's hard to call it a perfect season at Manchester City, he told me, until they win the Champions League. So I'm going to trust what Kun Agüero told us. Let's move on now, though, to talk about the red side of Manchester, shall we, Neds? Because
you've got a smile on your face now.
I mean, I'm just smiling because I'm happy to be sat here in Doha, but what an eventful week they've had, from the Cristiano Ronaldo bombshell interview to now knowing that he has had his contract terminated by mutual consent, I suppose. And now we're hearing that the club could be up for sale. This is the news that you would assume Manchester United fans wanted, Neds. You live in Manchester. I'm sure you hear their cries just as loudly as you do from the blue side. So what do you think of this?
I think to see the Glazers potentially putting the club up for sale is something which sort of will excite most United fans. I think the ones who have any gripes with the club, you know, that tends to be the foundation that all those gripes are built upon. I think throughout the years that they've been in charge, a lot of United fans have been very unhappy with not just things on the field, but some of the things off the field as well. So they almost want a sense of hope to believe that the club's going in the right direction, because for a long time they haven't had that feeling. Mm. I think from this stage you do celebrate, and the same way for, say, Cristiano Ronaldo leaving, I think some are happy to see him leave. Not because of, say, you know, the fact that there's his legacy and all stuff like that, but
it
the fact is they love their football club, yeah. Love their football club more than any other individual, so they get that. So then this Glazer announcement, it's very, very significant. Mm. And it'll be interesting to see who they do manage to bring in and who can afford a club of that nature, because I'm wondering, is that you?
Me?
Yeah, can you afford any of that? Me. Are you going to be one of the owners, or how does it work? Because you must be very happy. Maybe throw yourself in, do a good job of it.
I mean, I absolutely wish. I can only just try to afford a season ticket, because Lord knows that costs a pretty penny. But no, I think it is. I mean, you know, obviously I do have mad love for Man United. And I actually got to see a couple of, I want to say some friends that I have who are part of the Stretford paddock that are there, yeah, protesting week in, week out outside of Old Trafford. And it is, I think, just not necessarily celebrating, but it is a bit of a relief, because it feels like it's...
They're celebrating. This is the City United now.
To the end of a turbulent era where they felt that the owners just did not give the fans and their voices enough respect. And yes, we talk so much about how we understand that clubs are businesses and they have to be run like that to a certain extent. But at the end of the day, the most important thing is the fan.
Yes.
And it just felt like the Glazers did not want to take on what the fans had to say. On board, there was just such a disjointed relationship. And in the end, we know that that couldn't work.
So you're not going to chip in?
So, I mean, I'm going to chip in. I'm going to go break my piggy bank, and I'll probably see if I can... Imagine if I took some of your Man City TV money just to...
Listen, nobody said it pays well. But anyway, it's a City United.
That's
it's a City
story.
United,
it's
yeah.
It's a City United.
There you
exactly,
go.
Indeed. Well, thanks so much, as always, Neds. Kay, we're going to head back to you.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
But let's continue the chat about Cristiano Ronaldo, shall we? Portugal are in action against Ghana tomorrow. Obviously, there's been all that talk about the club and him resolving their issues. It's done. He's no longer a Manchester United player. Does it affect him at all on the field tomorrow, Shaka?
I don't think so. I think he's happy to put that chapter behind him. Everything that's kind of happened and how it's spiraled over the last couple of weeks. And international football is a welcome... It's a welcome break from it. He gets to be a part of a dressing room that has the utmost respect for him, with a manager who has an utmost respect for him, and just separate himself from what happened at Manchester United. Timing of it, in terms of just being away, couldn't be any better for him personally.
Is he leaving the Premier League, Craig?
You know, I said 6 weeks ago, I think Todd Boehly will dump this player on Graham Potter. and I'm surmising here, but I don't think Graham Potter would want him there. Chelsea have supposedly got a long-term vision for the future and a coach who has that vision, and this would go against the grain, but I'm still convinced that that is not out of the question that that happens. As for the game, I'm with Shaq. The Ghana game, I don't think it will affect him too much. I think he's been very good in his career at just putting that kind of stuff to the side. But I think the bigger problem is, if he plays the way he has done for Man United this season when he's been asked to play, which hasn't been very good, I think that's a bigger issue for him than all the other stuff that has been a sideshow.
I think he, for me, he wants to win. He's a winner and he wants to win. Even out of the field, he wants to win. So I don't think he agreed to not get any money. He agreed to terminate his contract with Manchester United without knowing what his future will be. I think he already knows where he's going to go. And I think he's going to, like a political person, you know, just winning the right time, you know, to say, OK, I'm going to sign for Chelsea.
Todd Bowley's going to be down the shops getting the wrapping paper. He's going to wrap Ronaldo up. He's going to take him round Graham Potter's house and go...
Or maybe the big cake.
Here you go. Here's your Christmas present. Oh, and by the way, you've got to play him every week.
Yeah.
By the way, you don't get a say in it.
Yeah, he's playing every week.
He starts every week.
Yeah.
Brazil also, their group will kick off tomorrow and we'll get to see how they shape up against Serbia. There's been a lot of talk about the starting 11 that will be put out by Tite, and let me tell you, it is looking like it's going to be very attacking. It was even put to the Serbia coach that it could be four strikers, and he said if it's four strikers it's over for us, it is finished. I mean, look at this, guys. Good luck.
Oh yeah.
Well, I mean, I'm sure he was tongue-in-cheek, but, you know, yes. Look what happened to Argentina, and Serbia, on paper, are a much better side than Saudi Arabia. That being said, it really doesn't matter what team he puts out from midfield to forward. It's a very attacking, talented side. Richarlison's not always been playing this year, and he's had injuries. Rafinha's hasn't had the greatest season at Barcelona thus far. Paqueta's moved into West Ham, missed some games, and, you know, Casemiro's been a great player, but there's some ageing legs. So it's not all doom and gloom if you're Serbia. It's not as if this side is without any weak points. There's certainly you can get at them, but they're a talented bunch.
Is it dangerous, though, going
to... Don't you shake your head. You thought Denmark are going to win this World Cup.
Well, he's not over. Already won it, already? I don't know. It's dangerous, but... I'm scared for Serbia, I tell you. The record right now is 7-0. I'm scared. Because if they get angry, those guys. Imagine Serbia scored the goal after 2 minutes or 3 minutes. We saw France reacting. We know that when those players play together and are angry, it can be bad for the team.
You know, there have been some dramatic moments so far in this World Cup. I don't think any have been as dramatic as Xhaka changing his favourite from Argentina to Brazil to win this World Cup, which happened yesterday, Shaka.
I had to.
Why?
I,
no, you didn't.
Yeah, dude.
Well, Argentina can still qualify.
Yeah.
Think about that story. They lose the first game and go on to win it.
Oh, wonderful. They offered nothing. They offered nothing against Saudi Arabia. In terms, once they put under pressure, were put under pressure, Argentina did nothing to react. And that's my concern. Because we're still in the group stages. Things are going to get a whole lot harder. Even if they do get out of the group, you will have to weather those periods in games against better opposition where things aren't going your way. And I just don't think Argentina can react. My picks are always... My picks always come with a little disclaimer that I can change my mind at any given moment.
Are we
including
having
this
that?
One.
Are we going to allow that?
Yes, we are.
No,
it's in my contract.
No, we can...
It's in my ESPN
contract.
You can
say what you want. We can agree to disagree.
I tell you what, you wouldn't want to go to war with Shaq, would you?
No, you wouldn't. No, you absolutely wouldn't.
I tell you what, the first sense the opposition had a few more guns than you, he'd be over there.
Yeah.
He'd be over the fence. Right, lads, I'm with you.
Yes. Oh. Yes, I would.
Oh, I swap my shirt. I'm with the other. They're better.
Yes, that is right.
Make sure that you join us tomorrow. We'll be looking back on all of these games and know that will be some drama to talk about. I tell you what, there'll probably be some added minutes to talk about. If there's anything we have seen so far, it's plenty of stoppage time minutes. There's actually been an extra focus on this. We asked Dale Johnson about it.
on our daily show. We've got ESPN FC Daily. It's a digital show that comes to you after the games on our YouTube channel. But this is what we're seeing. Longest added time in a single half. This is in World Cup history, seeing as though we are a bit of the history channel tonight. England against Iran, 14 minutes. Argentina, Saudi Arabia also up there with 14 minutes as well. But let's hear from Dale Johnson. He explained it a little bit more for us.
Pierluigi Collina was talking to ESPN last week and he was explaining how FIFA really wants to cut down on time wasting and get the, not just time wasting, but get the effective time for the ball being in play much higher. And he said that while people do focus on the general tactical time wasting of teams, it's not actually that which causes the vast majority of the ball not being in play. He says that on goal kicks, there's about 9 minutes lost in the game. The same for throw-ins when players don't really get the ball rolling straight away. And he says that while you can sort of hurry up players here and there, you can't really reduce the time lost there that much. He also says that every time a goal is scored, there's about a minute and a half lost from the celebration. And he just wants to increase that. Now, at Russia, there was 5 or 6 or 7 minutes of added time. Clearly, he wants to make that, he wants to clamp down on that even more and get more effective playing time. And he's doing that by getting the fourth official to basically log as much time as possible on those throw-ins, on those goal kicks, on the goals, on the substitutions, of course. And that's why we're seeing added time go to 8, 9, 10 minutes. And I think we can safely assume now that this is going to be a staple of this tournament. We're going to see a lot of added time. And it's not just because of tactical time wasting. It's FIFA wanting to get the ball in play to a much higher time.
Oh, we couldn't have stayed in that Dale Johnson shot. Did we really need to see Augie popping up in our shot there? Huh? Wiping his eye with those glasses on.
Well, listen,
I didn't need to see that.
You might not be in favour of Augie wiping his eye, but are you in favour of these? Well, trying to cut out this time waste?
I am, but the 14 minutes, a couple of them, obviously the first half in the England-Iran game was the knock to the goalkeeper,
yeah.
Which was handled terribly by the Iranian medical people, mm-hmm. because it should never have been allowed to continue. That's a different discussion. I can't remember what the 30 minutes was for in the second half, but I am trying to get some extra minutes, but there was 5 minutes today in one of today's games. Oh, I think it might have been the Germany game, when there was no subs, obviously, or no injuries. 5 minutes in the first half. So there's I don't know.
I think Jan yesterday pointed to something very interesting, that sometimes we see in the Premier League that you need like 3 minutes to check the bar, and at the end of the half you have like 2 minutes added time. So they forget about the 3 minutes, you know, and that's maybe something that you have to adjust. That's only fair for me. It's only fair. You have to play normally twice 45 minutes. And if it's because of an injury or because of a VAR checking, you have to play the 45 minutes. I'm okay. Just for my, when I go to the grocery store, you know, in between two games, you know, right now, I have to be fast.
Well, Luis Enrique is delighted with these extra
minutes. Oh, he loves it.
Well, I love the
more tiki-taka.
Yeah, I love the analysis that the goalie's taking a bit too much time or the multi-ball system where the ball goes out and it has to come straight back in from a throw-in. I think people forget that players are not robots, and you know, even highly paid professional athletes that are super fit do occasionally need 10 or 20 seconds to take a breather, mm-hmm. particularly if a game is really fast. You can't just expect players to go to the touch and bosh. You know, things need to calm down. Players do get tired and need to take a breath as well. So there is a balance between, you know, what's called time wasting, perceived time wasting, and actually players just taking a bit of a breather, particularly in a super fast game.
But they're talking about having at least 60 minutes of game, you know, in the 90 minutes. It's why you say a minimum of 60 minutes, because Luis Enrique was saying that sometimes you have only 40 minutes out of 90 minutes, which is crazy because of the time wasting. So that, for me, that's only fair. And we love football, so it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter, but if you do want to see more of Mark Ogden wiping his eye, make sure to go check out our YouTube page. On our YouTube page, we will be reacting to all the games right after them on ESPN FC Daily, and there's so much more World Cup content there, so make sure to subscribe while you're at it.
Let's get you caught up on some of the World Cup injury news. Bad news for France. Yet another one bites the dust. Luca Hernandez ruled out of the World Cup with a torn ACL. He's also out of Bayern's season for the whole of the season that's ahead and that's left. So that's bad news for him. Another French casualty. Also, Thomas Delaney. He'll be ruled out for 4 weeks with a knee injury. So Denmark will be without Thomas Delaney's services. Football Americas, there we are.
There we are.
Nightly, you'll be able to get it from Qatar, November 17th to December 18th, all the way through the World Cup, and you'll be able to hear all the penalty, non-penalty decisions.
Look at Seb at the, look at Seb at the front. Look.
Right where he should be.
I'm the main man.
Because he's a smaller, is right.
I'm the main man, he said, not Gomez. Me, get out the way.
That will do it for the latest edition of ESPN FC. Thanks so much for being with us. Stick around as well, because these guys are going to be answering your questions.
Yep. Maybe.
On extra time. Wonder if there's any questions about PSDs.
Oh, no, no. We're done. We're done with the...
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
This is FC Extra Time, brought to you by Globant. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time.
We have to ask Craig.
Craig Burley.
Have you had it? Oh, that's this?
Yeah.
The red stuff?
No, the white stuff.
Oh, I don't know, my hair maybe?
That's coming from my
How does he have dandruff? It's impossible.
No, it's impossible. It comes from something else. You know.
Sorry, what?
You didn't see the show, so I was asking, because we see many players with earrings.
Yes.
I was wondering if you had earrings when you were younger.
Do I look like a man that wears earrings?
No, definitely not.
Tell him about the pirates.
No, the reflexologist you were talking about,
yeah.
Is that the one that he was at Chelsea? Do you remember Tootsie?
No. I don't. No. It's not him. No, it's the guy in France, and I was thinking.
I was thinking
yesterday that reflexology can be found in your ear, like you can be found in your feet. And I was explaining that.
Believe it.
Pirates, again, pirates. Have many holes because they try to find the right spot for a bigger site, you know, to see further up. Voilà, we can do.
You've been reading too many books.
No, that's history. Oh, you know,
what the
you know
hell?
That Dan Thomas, he doesn't feel well. Dan Thomas doesn't feel well because, you know, too much culture, you know, he got tired.
His world's a culture-free zone. Don't even go there.
Don't forget the History Channel here.
Well, it was today on the programme.
Also, Stat Attack. Sorry about that. First question.
I thought it was on a different network to start with. 59% of teams, 48%, 74% get through. All right.
Fair enough. I did contradict some of our full screens as well, so I'm sorry to our production team for that.
No, you're not.
You guys were right.
Nobody noticed anything.
The fact that they were able to roll in the right graphic is a victory in itself.
Oh dear, let's move on to the first question for Shaka. Have you ever played in a match where you were getting shelled like Keylor Navas did today against Spain? How does he come back from that?
Keylor Navas will be all right. He's experienced enough. He's been there long enough, seen it and done it. That's not an issue. I mean, yes, I've played in many games where I've been shelled. Manchester United springs to mind. Every single time I've played against United, you face that barrage.
What is the biggest score, biggest amount of goals you conceded?
I got seven. I think it was Everton. So we played Blackburn and Everton back-to-back up in the Northwest. One was five and one was seven.
Blackburn.
I can't remember which one was which. Was Blackburn seven?
production yeah, team who are always
thanks
right.
For reminding me.
I'm not going to contradict
yeah, thanks
them.
Thanks for reminding me, Kay. So, yeah, I got 12 goals in two games, back to back.
Did you give up 5 goals against Guatemala?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. I did that too.
Yes. Guatemala?
Yeah.
They have a team?
Yeah. They scored 5 of me.
With all due respect for Guatemala.
To be fair.
Hold on. They have a team? With all due respect. Yeah,
yeah. Yes. Well, I love the country. I never thought that.
Have you been?
Never. I would love to because I
travel.
No, right. History. We are talking about history. Guatemala.
Well, we won't ask you any Guatemalan history.
Yeah.
Shaka, another one for you. Have you ever been in a game where you never got a touch of the ball?
Nah. You got a touch of ball at some point.
Don't know.
Why? Who never got a touch? Unai Simon got a touch today, didn't he?
Yeah, he must get a touch.
Doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Have you ever scored a goal?
No.
Are you going to
I did have a wonderful
Are you going to
assist,
reference though. A production team again?
I had a...
You can find my, also, I'm not going to give
find
you
my assist on YouTube, Frank.
Yeah.
I ran under a very good cross to free up some space for Anton Ferdinand.
And did you level. Score a non-goal?
He scored. He scored.
And did you score a non-goal?
Not in an official game. The only time it ever happened to me was in a pre-season friendly.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Free kick, Exeter. First game after my broken leg, free kick come off the post, hit me in the back and went in.
Oh, shit. Yeah.
But it's a pre-season.
So you believe in all this reflexology stuff?
Oh, don't. Yeah.
Don't go there. People are fed up, you know. Yeah, so of course I believe. I believe in Chinese medicine, yeah. And not only Western medicine. Yeah, because you have meridians and everything, and I believe that everything is... goes with everything. We try to, if you have a back problem or if you have a stomach problem, in Western medicine, it comes from your back or your stomach. In Chinese medicine, maybe it comes from elsewhere. So you have to look for the thing.
Who was that big guy at Chelsea that Ruud Gullit brought in?
Oh, the Dutch guy.
Physio, doctor, whatever he was.
Yeah, I remember. I don't know.
Huge guy. He was, yeah. He was, let's just say his methods were a little alternative. See, he'd go, he'd say, I'm struggling with my knee, and he'd come in and he'd grab your leg and go, yeah. And you'd be like.
It was kind of chiropractor, but from the ancient time.
I walked past one of the dressing rooms at the training ground, and big Dave Lee, the centre back.
Oh my God.
He was lying on the floor, right? He was lying flat out on the floor, and I was walking up the corridor, and all I heard was, and I walked past the door.
That's true.
And this guy, I think his name was Ted.
Yeah, something like that.
This doctor that Red brought in was walking on Dave Lee's back. Right? And Dave was lying on the floor going, oh! And this guy was over 6 foot and over 200 pounds.
So Dave Lee didn't play this season.
I've never seen anything like it.
Oh, God.
Whenever Ruud say, hey, lovely boy, you need to come and see Ted. Oh, I don't get lost.
Come on in, lovely boy.
Yeah.
Craig, what was the biggest upset result that you ever took part in?
Upset?
It can be either side, if you were on the end of it or you were...
I don't really remember.
Yeah, what is it? Like, the large amount of goals that you conceded and you lost?
Or ever get knocked out of the...
It wasn't quite, but before Frankie was there, 93-94, when we reached the FA Cup final, on the third round, which is the first round for the Premier League teams... We played at home the worst team at the time in the Football League, Barnet. Mm. Barnet were 92nd in the Football League, bottom of the fourth tier, whatever it was at the time. And they came to Stamford Bridge, and only our Russian goalkeeper, Dmitry Karin, stopped us from going out.
Great.
They battered us. I don't know why. We were just like, it's Barnet, we're going to win, no problem. Before you know it, they were hitting the post. And so we almost went out, and that would have been a huge upset. And Glenn Hoddle at the time was sort of under pressure. Oh, damn.
That's okay.
Blanche glasses.
It's just my glasses.
Anyway, we survived it and went all the way to the final. And that's why you giving up in Argentina is disgusting.
Saying that, in 98, Newcastle nearly went out.
Thank you.
At the same stage to Stevenage. We nearly went out to Stevenage. Kenny Dalglish was manager. And we went all the way to the final as well that year. We first leg was at Stevenage. We went there. It was raining. It was muddy. We drew 1-1. A hanging on 1-1. And then went back to St. James's Park. Won there. And we went all the way to the final as well.
A shame you can't show that faith in Argentina. Which underdog performance has impressed you the most? So, Saudi Arabia? Japan?
I have to say, and not because I chose them, but what I saw from Canada today, you know, for 90 minutes, physically what they did, you know, we are talking about the US, you know, being all tired, you know, playing one and a half. I found them physically, but also in terms of organization, very good. Of course, they've been clumsy and they lost the game. But Saudi Arabia, there are two chances and they scored, you know, and it's mostly because Argentina didn't do the job. I liked with, not because it's so early Iran, but I like what England did. I think they were very professional.
They called in England an underdog.
No, of course not. Okay. I forgot that part of the question. So, okay. Okay. No, I liked. Well, I, for the first time I say something good about the English. Come on, you should have. I think it was. Canada. Let's say I will stick
all right.
Canada.
What about,
oh no, I'm not going to go there.
What, Deering again?
No, I was going to say Italy.
They had a slight win because Argentina losing meant that they didn't equal the unbeaten record, which is held by Italy. They weren't in the World Cup and they had a small win.
Canada was a good shout, though. I mean, Saudi Arabia was obviously a great upset, but Canada's actual performance against the so-called number two best team, FIFA rankings.
Funny you should say that. Nonsense. I think this next question might be from you. Is it true that FIFA rankings are also done by Mr. Power Rankings, Dr. Hislop? I still can't believe Belgium is number two.
No, those aren't my... I don't do the FIFA rankings.
Nothing to do with you.
My algorithm is far more advanced.
Really?
Yeah. Well,
you would know if Shaka did, because the FIFA rankings change now and again. So obviously you'd know if Jack was doing FIFA rankings, it'd just be like cut and paste.
In less than 24 hours.
I don't want to go to Belgium, so they would never be that high.
Belgium are offering.
And they haven't, so they wouldn't be that high in my rankings.
What, a freebie?
Yeah, if there's freebies and nice hotels offered, Shaka may change his mind.
He's on his travels in a week or two.
Yeah, I am. All work-related, I hasten to add.
Off to Qatar?
Yes.
We look forward to hearing from you. We're going to be keeping you up late and making you send reports.
That's totally fine.
Rob has just reached us that you are now going to be sharing with Gab.
Oh, my God.
And the aforementioned...
Sharing what exactly?
And the discussed... And the previously discussed bunk bed.
What is that thing about sharing?
I prefer to lie on the floor and have Tim walk all over. What's his name?
Ted.
I just lie on the floor and
Yeah, but it will be on you. What is that thing at that age to share the rooms?
Why did you bring that up?
I can't get it out of my head that they get there and there's a bunk bed and Gab's on top.
Okay, spaces at a premium in
Qatar. Can you imagine lying in the bottom like that going, every time you heard the creak, you're like, God! Please.
Make it quick.
That's going to be you.
Are you sharing a room?
I don't know. I have no idea at this point.
Oh, I can't wait to hear if you
Why
are.
Why do they have to share rooms, you know?
Because there's not a lot of room.
Not a lot of
there.
Oh.
Yeah. It's been brilliant finding out who's sharing with who anyway.
No, nobody. You know, when I was at Chelsea, all right, I said, no, I don't share. I started with Roberto Di Matteo and I said, I have to stop. It's not because of Roberto. At my age, I don't share rooms, you know. I'm not at school or whatever. And we started that and I talked to Denise Weiss and we ended up, you know, having everyone a single room. But it was the case at the beginning. Never had to share rooms. Well, I don't share room with this guy.
I've got these visions in my head of Shaka going up the ladder to the top bunk. And an arm comes out and stops him and goes, that's taken.
Oh my God. Well, next question.
Next question. What are your thoughts on Hazard's performance today, seeing that he hasn't been in the best of form since he joined Real Madrid? Anyone?
Right.
Well, first when he started, I didn't look at the lineup. I didn't see him for 20 minutes. I didn't know he was playing, you know. And I saw a little bit of him. And it made me laugh when some people said it was a deliberate pass from Hazard to the and I said, well, that's not very nice. That's not very nice. But I don't expect anything from Hazard, I have to say. Hopefully he's going to get better. We didn't really see him. I think he has no influence whatsoever. But it goes with the old group, you know, the old team. They were all bad, you know, except maybe Courtois. I don't see any player that I can say that he had a good game.
Craig, after Morocco against Croatia, are you watching any more 5 a.m. games?
I haven't watched a 5 a.m. game yet. I was off yesterday, so I didn't have to get up. I DVR'd those games. Mm. I'm not.
Who's on tomorrow?
I mean, I am up early taking the dogs
not
out,
me.
But not that early.
That's 5 a.m.
Not fine. Even the dogs would be like, at 5 a.m. Give it a rest, will you? Give it a rest.
I can't believe you missed this worldy game. Now.
Leave me alone.
I mean, what? Oh, no, I get that.
Yes, it wasn't quite the 5 a.m. Argentina-Saudi Arabia, was it, that many may have...
I mean, I tried, I got up, I was like, got up at 5 and the dogs were like, get back in bed.
Leave me alone.
We are not going to walk 5.
Our producer watched it, he said it was absolutely brutal. All
as,
right.
as it said on the tin.
Frank, did you see the Japanese fans help clean up the stadium after their match against Germany? Ahem. Someone could learn a lesson from the Japanese fans next time they visit a friend's house.
Oh, that's... Well, that's not, it's not the same. There's nothing to do. You know, first, if I go to the stadium and I watch a game, I would never throw, I don't know, the garbage that I have. I will take it with me and I will put that in a bin. That's not at all what had happened with Dan. Dan invited me to his place, gave me a plate, and I came with my coffee because I didn't want to bother. I came with my coffee, I came with French croissant, chocolate croissant as well, and some muffins and everything. So I didn't come, you know, empty hands. And then he offered me to put my croissant on the plate. And I left, I said goodbye. It's when he said, oh, your plate is there. You don't put that in the kitchen. I say, no, I'm your guest. I don't have to do that. You will never do that in my place. That has nothing to do with the Japanese. And I want to congratulate all the Japanese to make it clear. But it's not the same situation. I invite you to somebody. I'm not a maid. You know?
Let's send this to VAR. Should Frank have put his plate away when he was the guest at Dan's house, even though he brought the croissants?
No.
Thank you.
Just because it's Dan.
No.
What you need to do is pick your plate up and kind of pretend like you're walking towards the kitchen, but just walk straight into Dan and hand it.
No, but tomorrow, for example, I'm going to Dan's place for Thanksgiving.
Don't clean up.
Of course I'm going to help out.
No.
Because that's different. That's completely different for me. I think I'm pretty well educated by my parents, and I know exactly what to do in any circumstances.
Clearly not as cultured as Dan, Frank.
But Dan has no culture. He wears shorts, you know, to go to restaurants, you know. From there, everything is dead, you know. It doesn't work, you know. And flip-flops, you know, that doesn't work like that.
I'm laughing the most that Dan's acting like his kitchen's so far away from his living room. It's like 2 steps, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it's not 2 steps for him. But 12 steps away.
Although, that's a bit lazier then on your part when you could have just gone...
Well, I know I learned my lesson, you know. I think next time, tomorrow I come with a vacuum, I think.
We look forward to hearing all about it, although I think that will be happening after tomorrow's
show. You're taking a vacuum?
Yeah.
You're taking a vacuum to Dan's house?
Oh, yeah, I have to clean
it. All right. Are you telling us Dan's house is needing vacuum?
No, not at all. It's just to do something for him, to not complain on the show after. I will come with Casey Keller. I think Casey was going to take care of the glasses, and I'm going to take care of the carpet, you know?
Okay, so on Friday's show,
I'm going to tell you
more about...
You will have pictures about me coming with a vacuum.
Yes, please, at Thanksgiving.
You'll see that soon around Connecticut, Frank LaBeouf's cleaning service.
Join us tomorrow. No doubt more fun and games on ESPN FC. We are available every single night, 6 p.m. Eastern, with all your World Cup news.
Night and days.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes!
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.